episode 43. Just make sure I've got this big intro set up. Hello and welcome to episode 43 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking with a Web3 company that has built a Strava-type lifestyle application with gamify elements that is aiming to be the leading Web3 fitness app, or maybe just a leading fitness app in the world. Users are equipped with an NFT sneaker to walk, jog, or run outdoors to earn tokens, which can then be used to level up and mint new sneakers. This is more than just a lifestyle app. This is also a game. This is Play to Earn, which currently commands a $21 billion market cap in the crypto world. But this company is looking to do a lot more than just be Play to Earn. This is Move to Earn. The company is Steppen. I'm talking to Yon Rong, co-founder at Steppen. Welcome to the show, Yon.
Hi, thank you, Anthony, for inviting me. Thank you.
Excellent. That was quite a mouthful to get through to start with, but I really wanted to set up, you know, what you guys are doing, because it's so great. You guys are a local Australian company based out of Adelaide, doing some really great things. And even today, it's significant to be chatting to you because, you know, the governance token that we'll talk a bit about later on, that the GMT broke the top 100 in the crypto market cap, which is tremendous. So congratulations to you so early on in this project and more to come. But before we get really into this Move to Earn and Steppen and what it does, I'm just going to give a quick shout out for the show. So if you like great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link on the show notes or head to the new website at gtwgt.com and register your interest. This episode will be on YouTube, but also you can get all past episodes and future episodes on the podcast platforms, all hosted by anchor.fm. All right. So with that, Yon, let's talk about, you know, your background. You founded this company with Jerry Huang. Just talk a little bit about your backgrounds and how you came to be at the forefront of this tremendous movement in Web3.
Yes, I think I have very sort of a mixed background. So I started off a bachelor of biology in molecular biology, and then I graduate, couldn't find works, and then somehow stumbled into mining, and then I become like a prospector working in the remote areas for about 4 years.
Okay.
Helping, using the resistivity method basically to find minerals for mining companies. And then traveling is pretty bad for building a relationship, so I quit and then started my own business back in 2010. Restaurants, food chains, and then we grow one shop into 40 shops in Adelaide in 5 years. And
wow.
Then I started another company selling building materials and scale to another shop in another 2 years. And then in 2017, basically I got into cryptos, seeing tremendous move in this industry, and start my own crypto fund called Crypto SA, and run that fund. And we are now doing a lot of OTC tradings within Australia, and did a little bit of a primary market investment. And then I was having a beer with Jerry, my neighbor, talk about Axie.
Your neighbor?
Back in September last year.
Is it literally, yeah, it's literally your neighbor.
Neighbor? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So what happened is Jerry moved to my street about 3 years ago. And I was driving this car with a crypto number plate.
You were that guy
trading crypto. Yeah, I'm the guy. So he came to my doorstep and said, "Hey, you know, I'm the new guy here. You know, here's a wine, and I'll become friends." So and then it was just like a random chat. You know, we were talking about Axie, and then we realized that I'm in the crypto industry. Jerry, he has a game studio. He'd been making games back in 2008.
Okay.
So naturally, we think this is gonna be synergies. So we merged the two companies together. And we start with about 18 people, and then we start building, and then here we are 6 months later.
So when was that? You said 2017. So when did you guys get together to basically start what would become Steppen?
Oh, about 6 months ago, on September last year.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So that's a pretty quick change. So from what I'm hearing, there's a few things I picked up. Number one, you were in mining, minerals, and whatnot, and I think that foreshadows a little bit about what this game is about in a way, you know what I mean, in terms of the way the gems and the attributes and the mining and just general crypto. But you've obviously been a pretty serial entrepreneur, you know, for a number of years. So getting into crypto was probably going to lead to big things, and you've definitely done that. So, you know, in terms of what started Stepn, the thing that I researched was that you went into the Solana hackathon, but it wasn't quite Stepn back then, was it? You had an idea to build something based on Axie.
Yeah, so we were named, we actually have two names. We used the name Fan Satoshi because original was game five. Basically, it had a narrative. So we're trying to find Satoshi, where is it, you know, outdoors finding him, find his token. You know, that's sort of the narrative, and have some sort of an alien background as well. So, and then we realized that if we want to scale this Web2, right, nobody knows it. And it was because we sort of put our shoes in there, put our feet in their shoes, say, okay, now everybody should know, you know, Satoshi Nakamoto, but obviously not.
Yeah.
So we say, oh my God, so this is the wrong direction. So, and then we realized that GameFi, we have to make some change, right? So normally GameFi is only targeted to gamers, and crypto and gamers, they're going to be a niche. So we're trying to break that sort of a niche barrier, basically say, all right, we can't make a game, we have to make a game-like app, you know, with some game element, but not too heavy, everybody can play. So that's sort of the pivoting point where we say, okay, we have to ditch the whole narrative, the heavy game element, and be more on the social side, on the lifestyle side. So then with some help with namings, we come as Stepn, and then we build a much lighter app versus the one we used to we wanted to build in the beginning. Yeah.
Which is amazing, because I mean, we'll talk about the app a little bit later on, because it is it's a light but very functional app. It works, it gets to the point of what it needs to do. So that's interesting, I'll park that thought. Just to go back, so Satoshi, just, you know, the GMT, the token names are all kind of linked back to what your genesis, the idea basically, and what you thought about, you know, you would be doing. But just in case the people listening don't know who Satoshi is, obviously in the Bitcoin world, he's the guy that wrote the white paper, he's very mysterious. You know, he's the one who created the genesis block for Bitcoin. So in the crypto world, he is the legend, you know, and someone, you know, I think there was an Australian last year who claimed to be him, right, from memory. I forgot who his name was, but, you know.
Quick rat.
Yeah. There you go. So maybe it is him. Who knows? But I think it's very interesting that you basically had a thought about how you would gamify it to start with, how you would, you know, do the growth hack to start with and name it. And I think this is kind of elements and foreshadowing what, you know, Stepn has become today. But if we go back to the genesis, so you guys, was that before or after the Solana hackathon? Because you guys obviously at the moment are based on the Solana blockchain. Did you go into the hackathon with that in mind, or was it something else before the hackathon?
Yeah, so we actually were assessing on which blockchain we're going to build, and then because one, we need some infrastructures, right, and also we need fast transactions, lower cost. There's not a lot of choices out there. You know, I have AVAX, you have Algorand, then you have Solana, and then basically we did a comparison among these three. We find Solana probably be a better one because you know, it has pretty much the best sort of blockchain of the year. So I was like, right, that's it, you know, pick Solana, and we'll attend their hackathon as well. So sort of, you know, it's actually, we decided to go on Solana, then we found there was a hackathon. I was like, great, you know.
Good stuff.
And then we go there, luckily we win the gaming track.
Yeah, awesome. And so at that point with the actual hackathon itself, was it Stepn at that time, or was it the older idea for the game?
No. It was a Fan Satoshi. If you go to the dev post, you will see Fan Satoshi instead of Stepn.
Ah, there you go. Okay, awesome. That's awesome in itself. All right. So let's fast forward a few months. You know, talk about the seed investment. And this is an important pivoting point for you as well, I think, on a number of fronts. So you guys got a $5 million seed round from Sequoia Capital, no less, and Folas Ventures, and a bunch of others, right? So in any industry in tech, you know, the spaces that I run in, getting a $5 million seed round is huge, right? So that's in itself a big achievement. But for it to be a crypto space and a gamify, you know, project, that to me is significant as well. But maybe just talk about how that came about, and also the significance of that in terms of helping you guys to grow. Mm-hmm.
And I think that actually, you know, I was investing in this space back in 2017, so I naturally have my own sort of deal flow sharing network and sort of connection in the sort of investment, crypto investment circles. And basically, I call everybody, hey, I want to start a project. And say, oh, no worries, bro, you know, I'm going to be, you know, helping you this and that. And then I do the pitch, and they say, no, thank you. And so it was quite funny because at the time, we didn't know pretty much how to pitch and how to write a deck and, you know, things like that. But then we sort of refined our idea. And I think we revised our deck for like 45 times, something like that. And then I still just basically reaching out to the old contact. And then we got to sort of Jason from Fortis Venture and a few other angels basically backing us. And then they introduced us to Sequoia and a few other Web3 and Web2 investors. So it sort of grew from there.
Yeah.
So but along the way, we changed idea a lot. So every couple of days, we revised the deck and adding new things, removing old things, make it more sort of lean. And it took a while, but I think it's a necessary step that we have to go through. You know, that entire process helped us to refine the whole product.
Yeah, because I think what people don't understand out there, especially, you know, some of the guys that are listening to this on my podcast in my type of space, which aren't into crypto, traditional sort of infrastructure tech guys, I don't understand that, you know, for the most part in the crypto space, there's a bit of a bad name to, you know, on-chain projects, the pump and dumps, so that kind of stuff. And there's not a lot of outside legitimacy to these companies, right? But without question, this sort of seed round, what you guys have done, the fact that you're a real company, you guys are fully on LinkedIn. A lot of people kind of, you know, keep themselves hidden in the background. You guys are fully doxed, as they say, in the industry. I think that legitimizes the space even more as we move into the next 18 to 24 months. This is becoming real. And you guys are probably the best example that I've seen of this becoming reality. So that's a good thing in itself. Just quickly, I guess we haven't really talked about this. Just talk a little bit about, you know, now that we've got the background on where you guys have come from, the different ideas, talk a little bit about what Stepn actually is, the app, what it does, and the whole gamify element so people get an understanding for what it is.
Okay. So to put it simple, Stepn, what we're trying to build at the current stage is a running tracker, but pays people tokens if they hold an NFT sneakers. And so that's sort of the very brief sort of elevator pitch of the product. But we're trying to design the app more strategically, meaning that, you know, if you go to our Discord, you see like a huge amount of data people trying to put together of how to best optimize the returns, how to attribute point, all this. So we try to actually build this as a strategic game. So people have to communicate with each other and to find, so because I have people plotting, right? Like what is the returns for each attribute. So it actually sparked a lot of communications among users and friendship, you know, on and offline. So we even have people that finding a new a girlfriend.
Whoa, so that's very social.
Yeah, it is very social. So we actually picked up that social element. So the app is designed that if you don't care, just get a sneaker, you're walking, that's fine. But if you want to be more detailed, you know, meticulous about how you can best return, make the best returns, then you have to actually study. And the more you study, the more you're going to get involved. And the more you find yourself don't know a few things, right? So, yeah, we have a whole bunch of people that study, you know, how they can best sort of maneuver in the app, and you know how they can get the best return on investment, how they can, and there's different aspects. There's a spending aspect, and also there's an earning aspect.
Spending.
So the app cannot. Yeah, the app has to make the balance between spending and earning, and some of the spending are conspicuous spending, so they are not necessarily going to generate the best returns, like the gem system, or the higher level sneakers. Versus that you want to just have the return as soon as possible. So people are spending where the people are making the token and can sell their token to people that are willing to spend. So that's how we make the whole economy, the wheel turns.
Yeah, I think this is, and to sort of set this up a little bit for people not relate, not understanding, you know, the crypto world or even Axie, is that basically this is like Strava. So you get on, the application is there, you press start and it tracks your run or your walk or your jog, okay? And no matter what you're doing, it'll track it. It's got GPS built in. And that's kind of cool. That's normal. People are used to that. But the thing that's crazy to maybe a lot of people out there, not the people that have used it, is that as you're doing this walk, it's basically earning you something called GST, which is the native utility token of the project. You then get a certain amount of GST per an energy unit that you have. And there's a whole heap of, and you're saying the strategy here is huge, right? It's quite complex. And actually, to be fair, your white paper was the first white paper I think I read a few times over end to end to try and actually work out how to best maximize, you know, my output and what I would do to basically what I mint, what I repair. So there's that gamified strategy element is huge. So not only are you out there with fitness, which I think is great because obviously we want people to get fit. Not only are you recording your walk or your jog, but you're also playing a game at the same time. So think about, you know, the way that you saw kids a couple of years ago, you know, around with their Pokemons everywhere, you know, trying to find Pokemon Go. It's kind of similar to that in a way where there's that side of it. However, the flip side is that you have to be kind of strategic about, number one, the shoes that you buy. So there's a concept of these sneakers. The sneakers are NFTs, and we'll talk a bit about that next. And then all these sneakers have attributes. So I kind of equated that to the old RPG games that I used to play as well. I'm not sure if you're an RPG gamer. Were you an RPG? Did you play RPG?
I actually played World of Warcraft since 2005.
So. Well, there you go. So if you think World of Warcraft, or I think Diablo or anything, I'm showing my age here playing Diablo, you know, you'd have a character and you'd build up that character with points. If you did something, you got points and attributes, and you had to basically, you know, say where your attributes would go. That's the same with these NFTs, with these sneakers. The more points you have, you can basically put them, and you've got to buy these, by the way, which is the burning element of this, which is also very smart. You then apply that to certain attributes of the sneaker that then makes them more proportionate to earning more GST. So it's very self-perpetuating. People have to work out whether they want to take the cash or reinvest it to make more cash. I probably butchered that, but that's basically the short of it, isn't it?
Yeah. So it is all about consumptions, right? So we're probably going to touch up about that when we talk about Axie, but it's all about, because there's a certain chance you can fail when you upgrade your gems. You know, it's only 35% of success rate. So yeah. when you actually fail to upgrade, then you burn your NFT gems, you burn your tokens. Yeah. Then that's a huge sink of the, you know, the gems and the tokens. And plus you have to repair, you know, the whole bunch of things that it's like, you know, daily life. You have to eat, you have to live under the roof, and I have to pay for this.
Oh yeah, yeah. Just on that, I forgot that the repair element, right? So you use these sneakers, but over time, every time you use them, there's a certain element out of 100, and that gets reduced in terms of their quality, right? So then you've got to make the decision whether you have to spend more money that you've earned or the token that you've earned to burn it to basically get the shoe back up to have, you know, 100% efficiency. And there are penalties when it drops under 50, and then I think 10 is the last one. But that's the smart thing about it as well. So it's mimicking real life. People have to actually think, like when you go buy some sneakers in a store, like yesterday, this happened to me, I'm not joking. I brought my wrong sneakers to the gym, and I know that the treadmill rubs the rubber and it wears it out quicker. So I made the decision yesterday to walk on the treadmill as opposed to run. So that's kind of, you know, a little bit about what you have to think about when you're going running and walking with these NFT sneakers.
So yeah, I have to, reiterate that the NFT do not have a life. So it's not like other NFT that have a lifespan, but this one, you just keep repairing that, then you're fine.
Which is part of the burn mechanism. All right, just on that, let's talk about NFTs, because I think I talked to you about this in the pre-show when we chatted about this. NFTs have got a very bad rep in the world, generally speaking. you know what I mean? And there's no doubt that they've gone to great heights over the last 18 months. It was the summer of NFT last year, right? Solana had a lot to do with that. That was basically, you know, what built Solana up to where it was, you know, at its height last year. However, everyone that I talked about NFTs go, how can a cat picture, or how can an 8-bit character be worth $400,000, millions of dollars? People just can't get it, right? Now, I know that, you know, the same question could be asked about a piece of art that was painted in the 1500s. Why is that worth money? Do you understand? Yeah, so I think that side of the argument, people understand it. And then people go, well, I can just take a copy of a JPEG, right? And if I own the copy of the JPEG, I own the copy. Well, you own the copy, but you don't own the original, all right? But in the previous world, there was no way to basically claim ownership of that original, apart from like if you had the original Mona Lisa. But people have Mona Lisas in their house all the time. In fact, we had the Mona Lisa growing up in my parents' house. It was a copy. So that's where NFTs kind of, you know, parallel themselves. But how would you explain NFTs as, you know, the Bored Ape versus NFTs like what you've implemented in the sneaker with attributes that are living, breathing entities?
Mm-hmm. So I think I see NFT as a component of the future Web3 infrastructures. What I mean by that is, yes, you can just say, okay, let me just crop that very expensive NFT and use as my own avatar. You know, that's only work on Web2. When we talk about Web3, let's say when we fully ever migrate to a true Web3 infrastructure, like what Twitter does, you have to verify your NFT, the genuine, authentic owner of that. So I would say that on the next generation internet, that ownership is about everything. And you cannot use other people's NFT, and your NFT is your own. So we see NFT as a tool of production. You know, when we talk about like, let's say the Industrial Revolution or the primitive age of human, we see they have production tools, or other is a stone axe or is a machinery. So those are tools that people use to make returns and make earnings.
Yes.
Right. So on the Web3, we see NFT as that, you know, one, you own your NFT, and two, you can use your NFT to produce either the user generated content or, for example, NFT like the sneaker, they do have a utility when we design it. So there's two ways, right? What we see that NFT is going to evolve. One is that I make an NFT, and then two, somebody see this NFT, like exactly like what Bored Apes, right? Bored Apes give their commercial right to anyone that owns that piece of NFTs. So the person that owned the NFT said, awesome, I'm going to do the secondary sort of content creations based on this NFT. So then you actually see the Bored Ape skater, Bored Ape Powell.
Yeah, right? Yep.
You know, you see all of them. So this is exactly almost like the World of Warcraft or even Diablo. You know, you see on YouTube, so many people are making videos or like animations out of World of Warcraft or Diablo. So these are the secondary sort of fan fictions. And those are the ones that will scale this one piece of NFT tremendously. And because they have content, they have narrative and everything. And when the third person, right, see the user content, generated content, like the story or the animations of World of Warcraft, it might be grow to, okay, this is actually very good, right? How do I own or be part of it? And it's okay, this is actually created by, for example, Bored Ape, the originals. And it's all right, I'm gonna get a piece of that Bored Ape. So this is almost like how the NFT spread on Web3, is that you're gonna need the user generated content, and you're gonna actually enable these people to make a return out of it. And so far we see how YouTube work is, or YouTube will be the person to say, all right, I'll take 30% of the advertising, and then I'll give the content creator 70%.
Yeah.
Or something 50%, for example. But on the Web3, the content creator probably gonna get 98% or 97%, where the platform will step back and say, all right, I'm not gonna charge 30, I'm only actually charge 3%. But because this ownership will spark so many content creations, you know, maybe 10x of, or 100x of content creations, they will generate a huge volume. So even that 3% will actually be more than what the Web2 company used to charge, right? On the 30%, right? So
yeah.
I think that matters, is the network effect sort of coming out of the owner right of NFTs on Web3.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And then what you guys are doing are taking it a step further, because you're creating a sense of ownership. Like for me, I only own three sneakers. Again, I came in a little bit late, but I'm pretty proud to earn three sneakers. I think that's a good sort of start for me. But I've got this ownership of these NFTs, right? So for me, these shoes are my babies now. I feel that, right? And, you know, they're working for me. I see them as being a bit of a, like a staking investment, you know, in terms of what I traded for them, in terms of, you know, I traded some Solana for them, you know, bought the sneakers, and then now they're there, they're being used for this purpose. I'm leveling them up. They're a very tangible investment for me. But I know that in the future with the project, you know, you've got this element of rental. So I could rent these out to certain people for them to make use of it, to earn, like you said, a bit of a split of the monetary aspect of it. So ownership is God in Web3, and that's the whole point of NFTs. It's the ownership. But I think what you've also done with your NFTs is you've really legitimized a very tangible use case that I think non-crypto native people understand. That is walking, tracking the walk, and getting rewards for that, and then doing it again with maybe getting more rewards. So you've done brilliant on that. In terms of basing and learning off Axie and the whole GameFi space, clearly, and you've not been shy in saying that you've based this on Axie to a certain extent, that was the idea, but also more importantly, you're learning off Axie. And it's no more pertinent sort of conversation to have today, because obviously what happened overnight with the Ronin link and whatnot. Yep. So maybe give a little bit of a background as to, you know, basing it off Axie, learning from them, and, you know, how you guys are going to basically, you know, look to be better than, you know, them. And not to say they're not bad, but how you guys are going to be a better version of them in this world.
Okay. Yeah. So I think a few things we learned from Axie is, one, the dual token system. Actually, that solved a lot of issues. If you want to use one token to everything, that doesn't make sense. So we have the game token, we have the governance token. We split this into two. And the second thing I actually learned from Axie is that we're the reproductive system, where the Axie can breed offsprings. And we see that's a great way to adding. So the entire model of Web3 application is the peer-to-peer. User have to create their own NFTs and sell to other players. So we as a platform will not intervene. So, and only this way, you know, the user will feel that we're not going to generate like 100,000 sneakers and sell to the market and then dump the whole, you know, ecosystem. So gradually they grow the ecosystem themselves. It is their ecosystem, you know, or our ecosystem, rather than just Stepn's ecosystem. So we see that as a great way to generate user stickiness. But we also discovered that Axie have done several things not as good in the beginning. One is that they didn't provide use cases for their token, especially the SLP, the game token.
Yeah.
And meaning that you have one specific use, which is to mint other Axies, and that's it. So we figured the best way to taking the token out of the ecosystem, because if you don't, you ultimately run into inflation, because that's only need that certain set of Axies. So is that you have to constantly drain the token away from the ecosystem by burning them, basically. So, but how you encourage people to burn it? You will, one is that you have this like functional mechanic. Basically, they have to burn it. For example, repairs. They have to repair sneakers every time they finish their running session. So that take about 10%, 5 to 15%, depends on your durability or resilience. Which is attribute. So, and then there's also this mystery box sort of component, because you see the mystery box opening become entire industry on YouTube. People paying millions of dollars to buy mystery box and open it on the social media, right?
Yeah.
So we have this sort of gaming element on the mystery box. So one is the mystery chest containing gems. People have to pay GSC to open it. Otherwise, once the soft field, they cannot get any more chests, basically. And then there will be the one that the upgrade of the gems, which you put multiple gems together, you upgrade, you have a gem which will boost your sneaker performance. So this is all the show off element, right? The social element, which people are partially pay for the function, but also partially pay for the social element revolve around it. For example, yeah. I'm going to do a live sneaker box opening. And if I got like a high quality one, people, oh, you know, you just made like a 900 souls. But if you end up with a low quality one, and people basically will just laugh at you. But again, social value were exchange at the time. Yeah.
And that's also that like luck and an element of gambling, I suppose. Yeah. That's like the endorphins. Yeah. That's what we're looking for as a society. We love that, right? So luck and some gambling elements to it, which, you know, that's, you know, that works beautifully. No one's gonna, you know, knock you guys for building that in, because that drives excitement, like you said. You know, the couple of mystery boxes that I got, it was always a question: do I open it now? Do I wait for it? Do I, you know, what do you do? And you know, you can get the twins. I've not had a twin yet. I'm a little bit. And actually, yes, funnily enough, yesterday I did mint my last sneaker yesterday before that came into play. So I didn't know that was happening, right? So I missed out a little bit on that. But anyway, but what you've described there in terms of learning from Axie, I think the biggest thing is the burning mechanism of that token.
Yeah.
So it becomes somewhat deflationary to a certain extent, I think is the key there. So, you know, while the price of the token has gone really well, the utility token, probably more than what you guys probably thought, I think anyway, in terms of the last couple of months, people are still, you know, spending it to burn it, to get attributes, to fix the shoes, to mint, all that kind of stuff. So people are addicted to the game, because in their minds, they would go, well, I've just walked and I've earned, you know, 40 GST for a walk or whatever, or 20 GST for a walk. I know that if I take half of that and I apply it to my attributes, then that's going to be good for tomorrow or the next walk, you know. So, and I don't care that it's now worth in, you know, stable $50 or whatever. I don't care, because I've just earned it, but I'm going to pump it back into the ecosystem. And that's a thing that I think you want. You don't want people just straight away taking money out of the token and putting it into stable, because that takes it out of the ecosystem. You want people to be able to burn it by playing the game. That's the gamify element of it.
Yeah. And also the social in the future, where people see this would be, you know, I think I'll just say one more thing about the NFTs, right? I think it's just this bull market makes so many millionaires out there. They just don't care, right? They just say, oh, you know, it's $500,000 of a JPEG. I'll buy it. One, I can afford, it's like almost like a diamond ring for all the Web3 people, right? So it's like, I can afford it. And I don't care if it's $500,000 or $1 million, I can afford it, screw it, I'm gonna buy it. And then I'm gonna show off, right, to the wealth, to everybody on the Twitter. And that I can buy a useless NFT worth of millions of dollars, and literally people can crop that image and copy that.
Yeah.
I just don't care, right? So I think that's sort of the thing that triggered the whole NFT frenzy, is that one, so many money around, and two, they can show off to people on the internet, everybody. If you buy a Lamborghini, you know, back in 2017, you know, when we say we're gonna make it, right? And we say, all right, let's buy a moon Lambo, right? It's all about around buying a Lamborghini. And only your friend and family can see that. But if you buy an NFT, the whole world can see it.
Yeah.
It's a different level of crack.
Oh yeah, that's exactly right. I have missed out on getting that good NFT myself, so I can't claim that I have a $500,000 NFT. But hopefully one day, who knows with the Steppen ones, who knows what will happen. But yeah, I think that's a really good explanation of it. Let's move on to a little bit of a conversation around you know, community, because I think that's been very important in your strategy, the growth hacking initially that you guys did to get the users and the initial alphas before it was, when it was private, you know, leading into what you're still in effectively what you're calling public beta phase as well, which is crazy in itself to think that. As I look at your social, the website's very slick. You've obviously got a great white paper. You've got a great link tree where you've got everything linked there in terms of, you know, people can go and get all the information. But the social element, the Twitter has gone crazy in terms of members. The Discord is out of control in terms of members as well. So talk a little bit about how important growth hacking and social, the social platforms are important to you in this industry.
I think it is pretty much everything, because when we talk about Web3, it's always the topic is revolve around community. And the community is your ecosystem. When we talk about web tools, right? So basically have a developer making an app and ship it and that's it. But with the Web3, you actually have to engage a lot with the community. You have host AMAs, you have to actually talk to them, make a bit of alpha, and you listen to what they need. And then you actually ship, you know, some of these recommendations. So building a community and encourage community to create contents around you and to create that network effect. It is really important on the Web3 because everything, you know, the use is the crypto is a very small sort of community.
It itself, is very, right? Yeah, only 10 million people. Relatively small. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So everything we've done in this space pretty much travel by word of mouth.
Yeah.
More effectively than anything else, you know, because the whole advertising industry on this space is just too cluttered. And if you want to penetrate through this, you have to use the real people. They're actually really passionate about your product, that they will talk to their friend families, they will talk on the internet, and they will create topic around it. So it is, you know, community is where you amplify, you know, your presence and what you're trying to do. And I almost feel like the move to earn, the X to earn is a mechanic where you attract users to be taking on board and they, you know, getting the first mover advantage. Earning token, making money, and then they got so excited about the product or how much they earn, and they will just go willing to talk about it willingly.
Yeah.
So, but then they have to get to a certain point where they are totally turned into your loyal users, and then they will nonstop talking about your product.
So yeah, so this
is totally different how we do it. Yeah,
yeah. You talk about network effects, first movers. It's similar to what if you studied the Web 2, you know, applications in bigger companies, Facebook, LinkedIn, all those kind of guys, Slack. It's the same methodology that got them to where they are today. The only thing is you've done it in this Web 3 space based on something which I think very smartly you knew would catch on with the stepping and the fitness craze that's there, and people just want to be able to do it. So you've got those network effects down packed. And I think also you've been very open about your prizes, the giveaways that you've been doing. Obviously you've seeded the market quite well initially. But also the thing that I've really seen, and I think that's critical in this sense, is that you're very big in Asia. And I think, you know, if you look at Axie, what was Axie in the Philippines? Was it the Philippines where Axie was first started?
Yeah.
Yeah, where it first became massive, and people now that started that years ago are now basically living off their earnings. Hitting the Asian market, and I travel through Asia for my job, so I know the way that they think is critical. So was that something that you guys purposely did, or did it just kind of happen via word of mouth?
It actually happened. So I think you just... all the coincidence happened at once. So what happened is that we are really popular now in Japan. I did a bit of study why we become popular, and it turned out that move to earn things in Japan is really, really sort of a norm there. So you move to earn coupons, you move to earn points, to earn pretty much, you know, Japanese yens. So they have like so many apps talk about move to earn things. So when the move to earn came up, this naturally embraced it. And then when they discovered that this earning will far exceed what they can get from, you know, the Web2 move to earn apps or free earning apps, which is a category, proper names for the Web2. So they just quickly, they started to make adoptions, and then they discovered this scheme element, because Japan is also they are very heavy spenders on games. Mobile games.
Absolutely.
And then you see people are spending crazy money on, you know, upgrade their gems. You know, I think the highest gem on the server are made by Japanese users. You know, I think they are up to level 4 or 5 now. So it's crazy, right? So because every gem, when upgrade, you need 3 of the previous version, right? So you need 3 of the level 1 to level 2 with 35% of failing rate. And then from 3 level 2 to 3, and then 40% of failing rate. So the failing rate is pretty high. And the early you do, probably you'll fail more. And if you get to level three, you got level three to level four, you'll fail. I think you're going to lose like 300 to 400 soul, which is about how much?
30,000.
US dollars.
Yeah. Let's just say that again. One particular gamified element of this, the gem, which boosts attributes, they're now at about 30,000 to 50,000 US dollars. It's crazy.
That's only level four we talk about. If we talk about level nine, then we talk about.
Hey, just quickly. You've got a duck.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
There he is. Yeah. Look at him. He's popped in on. This is the first for Great Things with Great Tech. We've got a duck on the show. That's amazing.
Duck.
That's good. He's a very well looked after duck.
Number one.
That's awesome. No, I'm pretty. That's crazy. The duck. The duck has stolen the show. Maybe he's stepping at the moment. Who knows? all right. We could talk for 2 or 3 hours on this, and you know, we still would get halfway. So I just want to kind of touch on a few more points before we wrap it up. In terms of the DAUs that you've got today, where are you at, and where do you want to go in terms of your daily active users?
I think the golden standard for this industry is to access 100 a million daily active users, right? So it took them about 2 years, and the game came out around 20th of December. Up to now, it's about three months, and we reached about 100,000 daily active users by 12th of March. So we hit that milestone, and then the next one will be the million. So. But then we were actually more reluctant to talk about data users because we sort of proof the concept works, right? Before we proof it, we say, oh, new time high on daily users and 100,000 daily users is nothing in the Web2 world, right? You know, when we talk about Strava, we talk about Keep or Nike Run Club, we talk about like 5 million plus daily app users, right? So, but the thing is with Web3, right? So each user probably worth 100 times or 1,000 times more versus Web2 because you monetize on fitness is really hard in Web2. But then we make it possible on the Web3, everybody's kind of crazy. So for us to go into the next step, which is a million daily app users, we're going to go through a whole bunch of things. Make the whole app easier for Web2, maybe a rental system.
Yeah.
And a more upgrade, more, make it more robust, more game elements to attract more users. So I think we're going to make that around the end of this year. So that's the forecast. That could easily be done, I hope, with the rental system. It's going to be very difficult without the rental system. So we're going to see when we're going to make that available.
Yeah, because I guess and what you're kind of saying there is at the moment, obviously the floor price, which is the minimum price that you'd sell a NFT sneaker on the marketplace has risen quite high. It ebbs and flows depending on the cost of what Solana is at the moment. So I see that this morning it's about 8.5 to 9, I think from what I saw, has been as high as sort of 10. And that's for the entry-level marketplace ones. But depending on because there's actually different rarities of sneakers as well that you can get. So depending on what you got, I mean, some of those floors can be 30, 40 soul from what I've seen, right? So that then is a hindrance to most people getting in, because when you say you've got to outlay 1,000, 1,200, even 10,000 US dollars to get started, people go, "That's crazy! Why would I do that?" That's in the crypto world, because there are there are the whales in crypto land. There are the people that have, like you say, earned money out of nothing and can spend because they basically made all this tokens from nothing. But then there's a lot of people that have got in to the market over the past 6 months who aren't in that position and still go, I can't really justify spending 1,000 US dollars on an NFT, no matter what you say, no matter how good you say it is. So that's where the rental system is going to come into play for me, because depending on how you develop it, I know this is highly under wraps still, it's going to open up a massive addressable user space, not only in the Web3 world, but like you're saying, if you get the app right, which is kind of what I'm thinking, you could actually bring in the Web2 people as well.
Yeah. And also actually think about it is that one thing that will actually differentiate us from Axie is that somehow, because the Japanese market gets fired up the first, they are not hurry of selling the token. It is an unfortunate truth, but when we talk about people see Axie as a job opportunity, you're right, they're going to sell the tokens, make a living. But when we are position ourselves, very soon the Sinclair is really unaffordable for like people from the Philippines, for example, and then they actually lose out on the opportunities. And then you actually have a far less selling pressures because people are going people that are spending thousands or tens of thousands on sneakers, they are actually can afford of not cashing out, rather to spend to enjoy some of the game elements.
Yeah.
So we have far less selling pressures versus Axie, and the less people sell, the more value the token becomes.
Yeah.
And then they become like a positive virtual cycle, and that then this is something that we didn't expect. We actually see this retrospectively of how come the game token we start with 10 cents and to a point I think yesterday was $4
yeah.
in 3 months time, so 40x. So we're trading at a volume of $11 million a day.
Yeah.
So that's you see, there's a huge demand. That's a huge demand on the. Actually, our trading volume on the GMT exceed Bitcoin last night.
Whoa, that's crazy.
$1 billion.
I mean, look, I've noticed that it's super high, and I've noticed on Binance that it's always in that top list. But that's such an achievement. I mean, well done on that. That's so huge. It's an honor to be talking to you about this sort of stuff. What I feel is like the beginning here, right? Like I really do feel it's a beginning. And I think the one thing that you guys have done, which I'm very, very impressed with, and is so different to other projects and other companies in this space, you're not afraid to pump the brakes a bit, you know, put a bit of a cooling, like go guys, you know, just watch out. Like we feel like this might be a little bit overvalued here, or we feel like it's a bit hot. So we're going to do some things. We're going to turn some knobs to try and, to try and cool things down with GMT GMT is kind of different because that's open at the moment and it's kind of market forces are determining that. But GST, certainly you've got the control to be able to do things to, you know, pump the brakes, and you close the beta. So, you know, there's lots of things that you guys have done to keep the reality of this in check and not just let it go crazy. Because if it goes too crazy too soon, I think you're experienced enough to know what happens to those sort of projects. So I think the fact you've done that is part of your success as well.
Yeah. We're going to do the triple earning event next month. So which means you're going to earn triple off of what you earn normally, which will bring the price down, of course, because you have more tokens to spend.
Yeah.
And we do that a lot. We did the double earning and double energy back in February, which turned out to be good. So people earning doubles, or people have access to doubles to earn doubles, basically.
Yeah.
So because we constantly see the token, the token since the day we release it is keeping the deflationary sort of manner. People are spending more than they can sell. So I think partially the Japanese market helped a lot, and also I think the second biggest market was. Russia and France, third one is France, and then the US. So basically, it's pretty much all developing countries, and people have no sell pressures on tokens, and they're just spending it, and they actually see this as a game, to buy and spend in the app, you know, for the social value for the
they're looking at
the mystery box.
Yeah, they're looking at a GST as being one GST because that's what it gets me in the game. They're not looking at it as a GST as saying, oh, it's worth $3 USD or it's worth $4 USD. They just see it as what it is in the game. So that's true. Just quickly, let's talk very quickly about the governance versus utility token. So GMT versus GST, because I think that's a big differentiator, like you kind of talked about before with the comparison to Axie. Also, the Binance IEO, which was basically launching GMT on Binance, which, as history would show, has been one of the most tremendous successes that I've ever seen in terms of what it did and where the token is now and where it's growing. And like you said, the fact that it's generating so much throughput on that platform is huge. But talk a little bit about the governance versus utility, and then why you chose Binance. And I guess how you chose Binance as well, because I think that's such a huge part of it.
Yeah, I didn't choose Binance chose me. So
there you go. But that should be a shirt. Yeah. I didn't choose Binance. Binance choose me. That would be an awesome t-shirt.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Well, talk about it, governance and utility.
Sure. So We're going to release the governance tokens white paper once we hit about 20,000 Twitter followers. So that's sort of the gig we're running on the Twitter. Designing the governance token, although I can't talk about it, but I can say we're going to break it up into three parts. There's going to be a GameFi part, there's going to be an NFT marketplace part, and then going to be a social part, which will be the social file that we want to do in the future. So we're only going to address the GameFi part for this year, because we're not going to touch the NFT market and socials. We're going to be focused on what we're doing. So there will be the in-app use of the governance token. And that's it. So the governance will not open until we have the social part rolled out. So people will have various use cases, just like the JSC in the app. And eventually we'll open the earning of the governance token. So I think that's how much I can disclose.
The governance token will be
similar to what game token are doing at the moment, but they're also going to have some different aspect. Yeah. I think I can release something in the following week, mid of April, roughly. I think we can start talking about it.
Yep.
And so far, I've done the white paper, and we're just waiting for that number to hit, 20,000.
Nice.
And we will.
I love how you're doing that. You know, because that's big in itself, and it's just generating energy. And also, you're going to be going. So you're on Solana at the moment. There was an announcement a couple of days ago that you're going to go to BNB, like so people can buy and sell the sneakers. It looks like on the Binance coin as well. So that's pretty cool there. So you've got lots of things happening. The roadmap looks amazing. The last thing that I want to talk about is just to geek out a little bit about how this world is Web 2, Web 3 coming together to do the best of both worlds. So I think the really cool thing is the mechanics of the move to earn. I know maybe in a very, very quick way, just explain about how you've managed to bring in elements of AI, machine learning, GPS data, and just general programming and development brilliance to be able to create an app like you have, make it very, very seamless, very user-friendly, but also smart in the way that it obviously detects people trying to cheat it and the complexity around the earn mechanism as well, because it's not just a simple case of going 1 + 1 = 2. There's some very complex formulas on the white paper, but also the fact that you've got machine learning and AI in it makes it all the more cool.
Okay, so if we spend 100% on building the app, we actually spend around 80% on anti-cheating mechanics. And it is actually one of the most difficult part of the design. You know, the game element is not that entirely difficult. You just need to work out what people need and then build that. And also the whole game element is, we're trying to build a simple one. So it's not, it's a lot of it's planning rather than just building it. But anti-cheating, we have to do it through, we're going to do it in the four stages, but we're now doing the three stages. So one is that we will need to access to the users, say a gyroscope or accelerators, all the motion sensors in their mobile.
Okay.
To collect their motion data. Basically, people move like in wavelengths, right? They move up and down.
Yeah.
And it is entirely different for the two legs. It's different from like a dogs or a cat or, moving on four legs, the wavelength is different. So when people are trying to strap the phone on their dogs, it doesn't work.
Yes.
Because you will have that distinct human motion pattern. And also because human move on up and down pattern, when people are skating or riding a bike, the system will pick up, say, okay, they are moving on their GPS, but their motion sensor are not moving.
Which you call moonwalking, right? That's your moonwalking.
Yeah, that's what we call moonwalking. Yeah. So this is the first layer of weak cheating detections, right? So you use the motion sensor, you compare that with your GPS, and the GPS is also a difficult part because I think it took Strava a couple of years to get the GPS right, and also it took us quite a bit of time. You have to get people on course on the road. And if you are in this app early, you'll see that the speed is not always accurate. And that's to do with the GPS sort of accuracy. And it took us about 2 months to fix that issue. Now the speed is very accurate. So there's whole bunch of things related with GPS, like GPS bouncing, GPS degrade. And so we have to fix all this, right? Otherwise, the distance will not be calculated accurately. And so that's another thing with so how you settle the tokens. So the GPS will be used in cross-reference with the motion data to see if you are cheating. That's sort of the weak anti-cheating mechanics. And then we also have a strong anti-cheating mechanics, which is based on machine learning. And that is entirely targeting to people that maliciously trying to create a step-in farm. You know, there's Axie Farm.
Yes, yeah, I heard that, yeah. Bots and whatnot, yeah. So bots are a big problem.
Yeah, botting, yeah.
Mm.
GPS spoofing, botting. So basically, they reverse engineer your APK and download that to a Android simulator on
your computer. Very smart.
And then run multiple of that simulation in one computer. I actually have seen these Axie Farms. You have like a whole array of Apple Mac.
Yes, I've seen them. Yeah, I saw photos. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they have like a 12 screens, right, on each Mac. And then you have like an endless of this Mac, and basically to mine tokens, sell it. And that will crush any economies, right? Because you always have more people selling versus people buying.
Yeah.
And also with a token that have little burning mechanics and use cases, that's even, the down is going to be even harder. So that's the one that we're trying to prevent. And the machine learning has to be installed to prevent people simulating. Because how they work is that they will run for real, maybe 5K or 10K, have the first set of motion data, which is the genuine data. And then they will GPS spoof your app to make sure that the GPS in line with the thing.
Yeah.
And then they will do some random numbers, right? So because if they do this, then the first weak anti-cheating mechanic will not be able to pick it up. Then you have to have actually the machine learnings to see what, because any random number generations program will have a pattern. And once you figure out the pattern in the eye of AI and machine learning, you will say, okay, this is repetitive data, AKA basically fake data.
Yeah.
And then you'll say, all right, that guy is cheating, ban it, you know, so.
So there's some amazing there's some amazing science that's gone into this thing. This is what I mean. This is not your normal sort of, you know, degen sort of web thing. And this is what obviously makes it so legit and why you've seen the success. Because again, if you want to read the white paper, go there. I'm going to link it to the show notes as well. The formulas are all there, you know, in terms of how things are done. Obviously, not everything is there, all the sort of goodness that you guys are doing. But the fact that you've thought about this, the fact that your dev team has grown to your team has grown to about 50 people now.
55
yeah. People, yeah. Which
15 people. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
15 are working on AIs. So,
wow, 15 and AI. So you've got data scientists, you've got AI people in there. This is some serious stuff, right? So I think it's great that I'm talking to you. You're in Adelaide. We're doing this out of Australia, but this is also a global thing. It's a phenomenon. I'm going to say it right now. And I wish more people are going to jump onto it. But I think we're going to wrap up. We've been talking for almost an hour, which is pretty crazy in itself. And I wanted to talk about all the good stuff about how, you know, you're doing the blockchain element, the Web2 front ends. But I think it's just people just getting that right. So let me ask you a couple of questions just to finish off, and then we'll wrap up, right?
Sure.
So firstly, what do you think was it about the project that initially disrupted this space?
I think a few things we did are not the industry standard. One is that we give away the sneakers instead of selling that, and that created a tremendous less pressure for people to get their money back in the beginning. And people actually also have a very low expectations of the sneaker. I think sneaker kick off with selling price of 0.9 Solanas.
Yeah.
So people have a low expectation. They're not trying to make the money back. Actually gave us a lot of room to tweak the system. And because we have a huge amount of bugs in the beginning,
yeah.
And the earning is not really accurate, and everything is not, you know, not functional. Imagine you have 10,000 people using that app. They will complain, they will fart, and you know they probably not understand the product and they will sell the token and then they'll move on. So
yep.
I think that's one thing that we actually didn't do that sort of made us tremendous low selling pressure. Only we give away 25 sneakers every day in the beginning.
Wow. Where was I when this was happening? I think I was early, but I should have been more early. But anyway, that's another conversation to have. Right, go ahead.
So that's one thing. And the second thing is that we ship things really fast, right? So in the beginning, we do like 3 updates every week. And now we're on the App Store, so the update only happens like once a week because you know, this reviewing period is a bit longer. So I think that's another thing versus other GameFi product or like a similar project is that we ship product pretty fast and we listen to the community, we change things, and we constantly are evolving. I think that's the most important part is you're gonna find the right. You know, it's really just survival for the fittest, right? You have to constantly fit the crypto native landscape.
Yeah.
And they have to do the thing that fit to your position. You know, we will talk about NFT marketplaces because we actually exceed the trading volume on Axie on the NFT side.
Yeah, you guys are good.
Like months ago. Yeah.
So, I think it must be said that we haven't talked about it, but just very quickly before we wrap up, is that the iOS application is obviously it's the step-in application, it's the gamify element, it's the attributes, but also it's also one of the very few that has a built-in wallet in there as well. So it's got wallet functionality, which actually links to your wallet on the Solana chain, potentially BNB when that comes through, and so it's a real functioning crypto wallet as well, all in one. So it's a tremendous achievement to get that out. So this is how I think you've disrupted the market, because you've brought Web3 crypto to the masses very easily. I think that's going to be part of your future. So I think you've spoken to my next question, is about how you will continually disrupt. You've talking about this all the way through and continued innovation. I think you've answered that question. The final question that I want to ask is around, you know, how do you think people, how will your users avoid crypto fatigue? Because I think if you look at the history of a lot of projects, they have a rise and they have a fall and whatnot. And I think a lot of the stuff that you guys are doing are protecting yourselves against that. But are you worried about that? Mm-hmm. Or is it just that you're so confident in your ability to move and change that you'll just get more people in and it won't matter? And then finally, what excites you about the project moving forward?
I think with the crypto fatigue, we are only, I think, 10% of our roadmap. So there's still many things we're going to build. So let's say we're probably going to start worrying if we build 100% of what we wanted to build. And then we leave, okay, there's no more we can do.
Yeah.
Then we can start worry about the fatigue thing. But so far, we're not worried. We have plenty of things we're going to do in the next 2 years, at least in the next 2 years. I think the most exciting part will be the scalabilities. Because when we talk about crypto project, two elements that's really important: defendability and scalability. And defendability is basically to build. I think we have pretty good defendability against other X-earn product, as you know, have the entire sort of you know, people can see what they can earn in each games, and they will make the choices. But the scalability is also very important because you have to carry the momentum to keep growing.
That's it.
You know, so when Facebook accumulate a billion users, then where's the next step? There's no more room for them to scale. So they are, let's just change the name to Meta. And then
yeah, I was going to say Meta.
That's
meta,
another way. Yeah, exactly. So that's sort of their way to escape from Web 2 to Web 3. So, okay, this is new sort of new land or discovery sort of thing that they can explore. So this is that's another thing that for now, we are very excited that we can maybe be the first few product to scale from Web 3 to Web 2.
Yeah,
and from the you know crypto native to sort of the normal people or to the finance industry, that's sort of the thing we really got it really excited and we want to do.
Yeah, and I think I can absolutely see that. In fact, you know, in my intro to this at the start, I said, you know, you're potentially looking to become one of the most popular fitness apps around, just normal, not just in crypto space, right? Like, you know, likes of, when people talk about Strava and all the other ones there, they might talk about Step In as well. And I think that's potentially where it goes. So look, I think this has been great conversation. We've talked about so much. It's been insightful. I'm really sort of privileged to talk to you, you know, in terms of just literally about what you've achieved, what Stepan's achieved. And I'm looking forward to continuing to be on this ride and also bring more people in. I think that's important for us out there who are using Stepan at the moment. Let's continue to bring people into this, educate them as to what it is, understand that, you know, this is kind of what the future looks like, and it's here today. It's not just the thing of, you know, it's not fake, it's happening. People are actually earning money for walking and jogging. It's happening. Right, Johan, thank you very much. So just as a final reminder, you can find me at Anthony Spiteri or at GTWGT Podcast or at GTWGT.com. And just as a final reminder, if you aren't subscribed or you're new to the show, please head to the website and hit the subscribe link or on your podcast channels. And with that, Johan, thank you very much for being on. Thank you, Stepan. And we will see you next time on Great Things with Great Tech.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Cool, mate. Okay. No worries. Let me stop that. That was brilliant. I so enjoyed that.
Thank you.